Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Eric Tercio signing in on Talk with Tercio, and this morning is going to be one of my very favorite interviews. I met this incredible woman on a ballroom dancing cruise that went from San Diego, California, to Mexico, and we traveled along the coast of Mexico together. She is an incredible woman. I'm honored to have her on my show this morning. I've heard all about her as a little boy growing up on the East Coast, dancing in ballroom as an amateur, and then eventually going into the professional side of it. Her name is Wendy Johnson, and I am delighted to have her on this morning. She's someone that I've followed, and when I went on my cruise to Mexico, she was supposed to be my roommate in my stateroom, which I was very excited about. But we had a great time dancing together, talking about ballroom, her career, and this morning she joins us live on the show. Good morning, Wendy.
Good morning, Erica. How are you?
I'm pretty good. How about you?
Well, I'm here in Las Vegas getting ready for the competition, so it's all very exciting.
I know. You have so much going on. You always do, though.
Well, this is true. I'm always here, there, and everywhere, but I wouldn't have it any different. I love it. I love my life.
And it keeps you going. You're beautiful, and I just have all the best words for you, Wendy.
Well, thank you. You're too kind. You're pretty cool yourself.
We've become best friends since we met.
I know. You're totally my kind of person. You know how to have fun. You're spontaneous. You don't care about, you just like, you live life, and that's the most important thing.
It is. So you're in Vegas right now. We're going to talk a little bit more about your big competition coming up this weekend. But you flew in yesterday?
Yes, I came in yesterday. My daughter actually helped me run this comp along with many other people, and she lives in New York. So whenever we can get together, I always like to be with her. So even though I don't actually have to do anything really till Wednesday, I came in here just to be just around and have fun with her and help the people who are the behind-the-scenes people running the competition. I'm more one of the front people.
Right, right. You are definitely the front girl. But it's good that you have a couple of days to relax and have fun, because you're going to be busy after Wednesday.
I sure am. I'm sitting here in a lovely suite at the Luxor Hotel. It's beautiful weather in Las Vegas right now, and a lovely view of the mountains. So life is good.
It sure is, and I can't wait to see you this coming weekend when I fly into Vegas for the competition.
I know. We're going to have a good time. We always have a good time, Eric.
Yeah. It could just be you and I, and we have a great time.
That's true. We'll find something to do.
That's right. So why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about how you got your start in ballroom dancing?
Well, actually, I originally started doing ballet when I was a little girl. I lived in New Zealand, and my father had many jobs, but one of them was being a barber, and he had a barber shop. So he used to cut the hair of a little boy whose mom used to bring him in, and she happened to be a ballet teacher, and I guess I was just jumping around the barber shop dancing to the music, and she told my father, "You must get her taught dancing. She's a dancer, I can tell, even at the age of maybe 5. So it was a few years after that. I never started ballet actually until I was about 10. And so I did very well in ballet in New Zealand. I won just about everything. I could win many competitions. And I was at that point where, what am I going to do with my ballet? But at the same time, my mother said to me, "You must learn ballroom dancing because it's a social grace." And I was not that enthusiastic about it, doing it, because I was a little ballerina. But I went to a cha-cha class. When I went to the cha-cha class, there were some people who were more advanced than me who recognized that through the ballet training that I could learn fairly quickly, and helped me. It took about a year or so, and I packed in the ballet and did ballroom, because I much preferred dancing with someone as opposed to dancing on my own. And that was the end of my ballet career and the start of my ballroom dancing. So,
well, so it started as a little girl, because I know when I was a young boy that I started in tap dancing, and then it went into ballroom. So it seems that it will derive oftentimes from another form of dance.
Yeah, I think that any kind of dance training when a child is small is wonderful because it's nothing bad about it. It's exercise. It's very social. You know, you have a good time. But I think that with ballet or ballroom or tap dancing anyway, in the end, unless you are going to really make a career out of it, it was more interesting to go into ballroom dancing because it has much longer life. You can dance for the rest of your life if you're doing ballroom dancing. So I think that was one thing that appealed to me, but mostly I just like dancing with people. It was much more fun and to this day I still prefer dancing with someone to just jumping around on my own. So that's how I started, and it was in New Zealand, and I was lucky at the ballet studio that I was at with ballet at the back, and my ballet teacher, her husband taught ballroom dancing in the front of the studio, so there were like two studios end on, and that's where. So I just hopped into the next studio and did ballroom dancing, and I think I became the champion of New Zealand when I was about 20. So it only took me about 2 or 3 years to do that. However, you know, dancing in New Zealand is on a world scale, not really so high up the world scale of dancing, but it still made me the champion of my country, which was something that I was very proud of. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's always something to be proud of when you accomplish something like that within your own country. I think your comment about that this form of dance is definitely something that you use for the rest of your life, that's very true, because many people will find that it's a social outlet. You know, you can't really go out at a wedding and do a tap dance, right?
No,
you would pick someone
right
up and dance a foxtrot or a swing.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess you can. You'll look a little crazy, but it's never a waste of the other dances, because I always found that my other dancing helped me with my ballroom. But definitely ballroom opens up so many different outlets, and maybe you can talk about the social level of ballroom dancing versus the competitive level.
Well, ballroom dancing is, you know, today actually in this country, or actually all over the world, children are being taught ballroom dancing at an earlier age. In fact, at our competition on Saturday afternoon, we have a lot of children here dancing. So the tradition of the Europeans, which was to teach dancing to children much earlier than it was in New Zealand, or actually typically in America, at least kids today are getting that social grace a little earlier on, perhaps, than I did, or even I think you went into ballroom a little bit later on. The thing that's great about ballroom dancing, I think, is little kids do it, and people as old as 90 do it, maybe even older. And no one cares how old you are. If you have a dance with somebody in a social form, it's just about the fact that you're dancing. It's a great leveler of any age group, any ethnicity. It's wonderful, you know. At our competition here, we have kids from as little as probably 5 and 6, and our probably oldest competitor would be at least in their 80s. And we have different divisions, obviously, for those different ages. But you would be amazed. Well, you're not amazed because you see them, how fit they are, and
I'm still
well
always
adjusted
amazed when
the kids
I see the 5-year-olds. Yeah.
Yeah, like the little kids, you know, it's wonderful for them because they have something they have to do. And I love it. I see the little kids get into their tail suits or their little outfits they dance in, and then I see them in the hallways later on in their regular clothes, and they're just like any other kid, except when they put their dance clothes on, it's all business and it's work, and they're out there to do it, and they're just adorable. I'm sorry that coming through is maybe another call on yours or my phone, but we'll ignore it.
Yeah. Well, we have to. This is important. You are live on the air, Wendy. So you're just on demand. Everybody wants to talk to you. But for the next 50 minutes, you are mine.
Oh, you're all right, then I'll be yours. I never said how I came to be in America, because obviously I'm in America now, and I was there at that time when I was 20, still in New Zealand. After I became the New Zealand champion, I actually went to England to get better dance training, because we're so isolated in New Zealand. The closest thing is Australia, and we had danced in Australia, and that's the deal out there between Australians and New Zealanders. We all dance, it's a 3-hour plane trip, and we dance in each of our countries, but if we won't go dance anywhere else, at that time England was the center. So I ended up going to England and spending 3 years in England and dancing all over England and Europe. and then came to America because I was put together with someone as a dance partnership.
Wow. How long were you in England for?
I was in England for 3 years. Do you want me to tell the years, or can we just leave it?
Oh, no, no, no. You can just, you don't have to tell me the exact date, Wendy. We don't want to date you. We know you're 40.
It was great fun. And you know, what happened was we were a couple from New Zealand, so there was a gentleman over there who was wanted to bring dancing more to some places in Europe, and we used to get in a minibus. We would represent New Zealand, someone would represent Australia, England, all the countries. We'd get in this minibus and be taken to, I remember going to Italy when there was no dancing in Italy, and we would just dance in the village squares and hotels maybe, and brought dancing to Italy. And today Italy is one of the foremost nations in the world for dancing. And we just knew that this was a great opportunity to see the world, so off we went. And I saw a lot of Europe like that, representing New Zealand. And the big competitions, we did very well in the big competitions as well, but my adventures in that minibus with maybe 12 couples were a great time in my life. Dancing has done a lot of things for me. So you didn't even know that about me, did you?
Well, I know dancing has really taken you all over the world, and it's definitely taken me places that I never thought that I would be today. So that's the beautiful thing about this art.
You're right.
It opens the doors everywhere.
You're right. If you can dance, you have a friend somewhere, because if you can dance, there's always somewhere in the world where there's a dance hall or a studio, and you can walk in and say, you know, I take dance lessons in America or New Zealand, or I know how to dance, and you immediately have a friend. I think it's wonderful. I'm so glad that things like Dancing with the Stars now are on television, because it was a subculture that not so many people knew about worldwide, and television has opened it up to allowing the general public to go have a little glimpse at our world, which has made the general public go, oh, maybe I can do that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's definitely opened the pathway for a lot of local independent ballroom studios because it just so broadly, you know, put the perspective out there of ballroom dancing with the show on ABC. So it's great to have that show. I believe it's been running now it's in its 10th season, 11th season. Where's it going now? You're the expert.
Well, and I'm not such an expert, particularly on figures, but it has been going for quite a long time. I know that it was, you know, in England, even when I was there, there was a show called Come Dancing, which was kind of a local thing where the south of England danced against the north of England, danced against Wales, and then the show went off the air, and I think somebody had an idea in England to bring back a version of that, which they call Strictly Come Dancing over there. And so they started the show, and then the producers were like, well, maybe we'll take it to America. But they were not sure if it would really work in America. And I think they thought maybe they'd have a couple of seasons. I don't think anyone anticipated it would be the huge success here and all around the world now that it became. Maybe yes in England, because they'd had this former show Come Dancing, and ballroom dancing is a huge part of England's tradition. People go dancing in England. People know how to dance in England. Typically, the average, say, New Zealander or American wouldn't know how to dance.
Right. It's. I think it's a very cultural thing, and here it had to be acquired.
Well, here is a big sports country. America is a huge sports country, which is to be admired. And, you know, of course, any kind of athletic fitness type thing is keeping our kids healthy and us generally healthy. It's just that dancing was not really part of that scene. I mean, Arthur Murray was a smart businessman. I wasn't here when he started his chain of studios, but he was a smart businessman who saw a need for people to learn social dancing. And in America here, the first people who really got dancing on a competitive level going were the people from England who came over here 50 years ago and saw that it was a great country and started having competitions and teaching the English way of dancing. And that's really how the competition scene started here. I got here, and when I first got here, there weren't so many competitions. Today there's a competition every week somewhere in America.
Right.
In those days, there was maybe like 4 or 5 competitions in the entire country all year. So mm-hmm. it's certainly today is just a whole different scene, you know.
Yeah, it sure is. I think that when we talk about the athletics of this country, and then also within our own dance sport, you have to be in pretty good shape, you know, if you're going to compete, especially in the professional level. You know, both the Latin and the smooth dancing, it's quite a workout.
Well, it is a workout, and they've changed dancing now to dance sport. Across the world, it's not called ballroom dancing, it's called dance sport. And the reason they did that was because the amateurs would like to get it in the Olympics. As long as I've known, they've been fighting to get ballroom dancing in the Olympics. And it really should be there with ice skating or rhythmic gymnastics or any of the synchronized swimming, the artistic type of Olympic events. And in order to do it at a high level, there's no question about it, you have to be an athlete. You just cannot perform at the level that they do without being an athlete. The problem with the thing is that it's half artistry, half athleticism, and from the point of view of going into the Olympics. So that's still going on, trying to get that in there. And the point of view from us, it's... if you're doing it professionally, you have to be in shape. There is no question about that. And if you're doing it as a pro-am dancer, as a hobby, you automatically start to get in shape because you just can't dance and really not lose weight. I mean, it's exercise. But how nice to exercise with somebody to music and socially enjoy it, as opposed to standing in the gym, which I hate, running around doing things. I hate the gym. You can tell.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, but you look great, and as it's probably from all those years of dancing, I would think so.
Well, Eric, I used to look better. I think you get older than
Well,
really.
I think you look pretty darn good, Wendy. I told you when I first met you, I said I would take you out on a date.
Oh, nice. That's very sweet. I'm very flattered, and you're a lot of fun. As you get older, clearly metabolism slows down. And you know, although I choreograph a lot and I dance a lot while I do choreography, it's not the same as when you were younger. But look, I'm Dancing with the Stars. All those people lost weight.
Right.
They had no choice. It just starts to drop off you when you dance at that kind of level. But the gym is great. It's great for some people, and I know that they love going there. I just never found it that inspiring.
Yeah. You know, I always found that music got my body moving. You know, when I would hear that cha-cha beat, I would immediately just start doing cha-cha steps that you would dance to, but just kind of synchronize them into a workout. So that's my workout.
I watched you at the studio one day, Eric, and you were just dancing around there having your own party. I thought it was great. I'm like, this man, he loves to dance, I can tell. And even on the cruise ship, you know, you were up every dance, which was great. I mean, that was a great band we had, and so wonderful to see everybody just dancing with each other, having fun. You know,
yeah.
It didn't matter who it was. We were all up there. The music was good, and clearly, if the music enhances the situation, I mean, even exercising in the gym, the classes that maybe would interest me would be the ones that were done to music.
Right. It's funny that you recognize the fact that I have my own party, because even at home, you know, when I lived home with my parents, music would be on. My family loves music, and my grandmother loves to dance, and that's where I got my rhythm from, I think.
Yeah.
From her. So I was just... As a little boy, I was always dancing. So around the house, I'd be doing, you know, triple twinkles in the hallway. And my mom and dad would just look at me and go, okay, you know, well. but
you
know that
so
everything's
great.
Okay. And
yeah, you found dancing. I mean, you're so great at the art you do too, but dancing is not, it's part of your business now, but it's your passion. It's such a great passion. I mean, it doesn't matter how old you are. That's our favorite thing to do. Well, shopping's pretty high up there too, but
Yeah, dancing will save us money on some level.
This is true.
How great is it that you know, someone my age can take the hand of a woman who's in her 70s or 80s and be able to dance a foxtrot. You know, we're
right
on the same level. That you could actually have body contact with someone, and
yes,
it can be the most respectful and beautiful thing to be able to get on the
yes
dance floor and do a tango or a cha-cha or a foxtrot. It's very universal to all ages.
I mean, look at Florence Henderson, how graceful she was on the Dancing with the Stars. Cloris Leachman was amazing. Cloris Leachman was a very good dancer. Actually, so was Florence
yeah
Henderson. And you could see that Corky enjoyed dancing with her. She was fun to dance with. It's
right
a wonderful, just if nothing else out of this interview, if we can share with people how fun it is to do what we love to do, then I would feel like this was a great interview.
Yeah, yeah, it definitely is. You know, I cannot imagine not dancing. It's brought so much happiness in my life. And I think for many dancers who are listening, you know, it's a big stress reliever. You know, when you go on your dance lessons, people take lessons for various reasons. I know here from my own professional teaching, people come in and they want to do it just for themselves. Then they find that they really love it and they want to compete, and they do it for themselves to recognize where they are as a dancer.
Well, you know, I don't have studios now. I'm more an independent consultant and travel around more training the teachers. But when I did have studios, it was always interesting for me to find out why someone came into studios. Sometimes people were getting divorced and they wanted a new life, and dancing was part of it. Sometimes it was a couple who came in to learn for their wedding, but then got really hooked on it and loved it and continued it. Sometimes a couple just came in to dance and maybe one stayed and the other didn't. Very often men were like, oh, you just danced to the wife. And it was perfectly fine for her to do that too and do it for herself. He had golf and maybe she had dancing. So there are many,
right,
many reasons why people come in to learn to dance. And I always say to someone, the hardest thing was that hardest first thing was to pick up the phone and make an appointment or walk up those stairs to a dance studio. After that, it's easy because you meet a few people and then you're on your way. I'm a very, very big advocate of the general public learning how to dance. I mean, I have my own dancing, which is my passion. I produce shows, which is I love doing because I get a great deal of pleasure out of producing and seeing something actually happen like that. But I still remember, my first dance lesson, and one of my favorite things to do is teach a first dance lesson to someone and see them actually learn to have fun to the music, relax a little bit and go, oh my gosh, this is something that maybe I can do. It's still one of my most fun things to do because there's so much reward to us as teachers when we see that something we love is somebody else's shared in that experience and is going, it's something I can do. It's a great feeling. So in all aspects of the business, I think, you know, that's why we do it. We're really teachers in a sense. It's just that we teach dancing. That's what we impart, that knowledge to people.
Right.
I mean, my first job was actually in a bank. What a total waste of time that was, since I can't hardly balance my bank account. But I remember when I first left school, I wanted to be a florist, and my mother said I wasn't going to be a florist because there was no money in doing flowers. I had a talent for doing flowers and still to this day do. And so I went to work in the bank, and dancing was actually just my hobby. It didn't become my profession until I actually came to America. Before that, I made costumes in England to support my habit, which was dancing. And when I came to America is where I actually made it my profession and was so lucky that today, still, that's what I do. What I love to do most is what I do every single day of my life. How lucky am I?
Right. And how many people say that they actually really love what they do, can wake up each morning and say, you know, that are happy?
Not too many people. My daughter, she lives in New York, and she's been in the fashion business, and she never dance. She can dance. If you ever dance with her, she feels great to dance with. And if I do the shows and I do something that requires wearing flatter shoes, she'll dance. If it requires getting into high heels, she won't do it in my shows. But my son pursued ballroom dancing as his profession, and he's one of the top Latin teachers and performers here in the country. But the funniest thing was when they were kids, Marcus had put no value on the dancing at all because his parents were a dance couple. He was like, oh, he'd rather make cappuccinos. And his friend said to him when he was at college and he was studying art history, why don't you dance? I mean, we can make cappuccinos, but we can't dance. And so that's how he came into the dance industry, actually quite late. Around 20, he decided, well, he'd teach a bit. And then about 21, he said, you know what, I think I want to do this seriously. And since then, he's pursued it seriously. And I always said to my kids, do what you love to do. I know it's about making money too, but you have to do it for a long, long time. Always do what you love to do. Otherwise, it's not the dress rehearsal here. You spend your entire life doing something you don't want to do. I couldn't even visualize that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Would you say that this business is glamorous at times?
Well, I think our business is glamorous. The interesting thing about our business in America, which is so wonderful, is that if you want to dance, you can make a profession out of dancing. And this is where America is different to the rest of the world. And I'm trying to bring pro-am dancing into New Zealand for this reason. And pro-am dancing means a teacher dancing with a student. And what happens in the other countries, a lot of the other countries, is ballroom dancing at a very high level, people make it their occupation. But the average dancer has got a day job and then dancing is their hobby or passion. In this country, because we have studios and a professional amateur dance scene where teachers dance with students, it's made it possible for people who love to dance to be professionals, and that is their job entirely. They don't have dancing just as a hobby and have to have another day job to support their dancing. You're lucky. You have two careers. You have one in broadcasting and one with dancing. But you can, in this country, have a life as a professional dancer if that's something you want to do, which when some kids leave school or they're training to be dancers as amateurs, now that is an option for them. They don't have to say, okay, now I have to go be a lawyer or a doctor or whatever. They can actually continue in the dance business, and I think that's a great asset that America actually has, perhaps on the rest of the world.
What would you say it takes to be a competitive dancer?
A passion, number one. You know, it helps if you have talent, but I've seen a lot of talented dancers who haven't had the work ethics to make it work. And I've seen a lot of untalented dancers who actually have worked very hard and made dancing very successful, made a career out of it and done very well. So I think you need ultimately to have a little bit of both. But if you want it bad enough, you can do it.
Right. And on a social level, for people who are listening who have never danced before, and now because of you, Wendy, that they want to go run to a dance studio and take lessons, what would your advice be to people who are thinking of taking lessons or have just begun to take some lessons?
Well, people who have never taken a lesson, but it's been on their list of things to do, and I know there's a lot of ladies out there maybe listening who go, oh, well, I don't have a partner, or I can't go do it, or I'm too old, or I'm too fat, or I'm too something. You know what? Look in the yellow pages or look on the internet. Find a dance studio that's nearby. Most dance studios offer a free lesson. I almost would say every dance studio pretty much offers a free dance lesson or some kind of special that you can afford. Go in and try it. What have you got to lose? You go in and try it and see if you like it. The option regarding money, there's always private lessons, which are obviously a little more expensive. Anything that's on a private one-to-one basis is. But studios have class lessons where it's not so expensive, and you can go in there and join in classes. And for every woman that's out there saying, oh, there's no one to dance with, there's a man in that dance class who's saying, I don't have anyone to dance with either. So there's a way to meet people, too. I mean, how cool is it? Lose weight, make friends, meet people, and have fun. I don't know anything else, actually, that covers all those things.
Right.
You?
No. No, I can't
and
think
it,
of.
And if, you know, if you have started dancing, there's different levels of dancing. You may come into a studio and just do it socially for yourself, for exercise, to meet people, it's something to do. And then you may get more into it and want to do competitions. And that's a great thing in America is we have this vehicle competitions like I have here in Las Vegas where you can enter the competition in the same age group as what you are, in the same level of what you're dancing at. So if you're a beginner, we have a beginner competition, and we have hundreds of people here at this competition at the beginner level, and we have them in different ages. If you're under 20, there's an age group. 20 to maybe 35, there's an age group. 35 to 45, there's an age group. And so on up until however old you are, there's something somewhere that you can actually dance in a competition. And the beauty about a competition is it's not even so much winning or losing. It's the fact that you participated in something, and the competition gives you a goal. So you've got, okay, I've got to dance here. I better get my act together. And it's a reason to be. But that's one part. It's just one part of dancing. But that's what this competition here in Las Vegas is about. We have professional events for the professions. We have amateur events where they're just two amateurs together. We have kids. But the major part of our event here is teachers and students dancing together.
Mm-hmm. And like you were telling me earlier, is that that's something that's pretty new to your country or hasn't really been introduced as much?
Yeah, in New Zealand, it's so funny. New Zealand has amateur dancing, and not so much in the profession. There, every city might have two or three studios, whereas against in America here, there is way more studios. But the studios operate off teaching amateur dancers. Some of them are only open at night, and the owners of the studios have other jobs, or they might incorporate ballroom dancing and have ballet event things in the studios as well. But when I went out there last year, I was like, there was not too much in the professional scene. There was more professional dancers dancing when I had lived out there. So I said to them, you know, something's wrong with the scene here. You need to encourage your amateurs to turn professional and stay in the dance industry, because they just, once they stop their amateur careers, go off and do something else. So they started a few competitions where the teachers actually danced with some of their students. And the report back to me was that the people at the competitions loved seeing the students dancing with the teachers. Of course, they loved seeing their teachers dance. So I had a friend who's of Dancing with the Stars out there. She's a former dance champion, and another gentleman. And we decided to have a Kiwi dance class, that we're calling it, Kiwi being a New Zealander. And we're incorporating pro-am dancing as well as the amateur dancers. And we have some interest from America and definitely from Australia. And now that New Zealand knows that these people are coming, they're getting it together and are going to have some pro-am dancing as well. And I'm hoping that this event that we run will turn, it's right now it's a 1.5 event, that we can turn it into a 2 or 3 day event and it become part of the social dance calendar out in New Zealand and Australia, but also encourage the people out there, they can start putting these pro-am competitions at their competitions, because they have competitions there somewhere every week too. It's just a part of the business that's not been available. And so to dance in New Zealand, you had to have a partner. If you were an amateur dancer, you had to have an amateur partner. And if you didn't have an amateur partner, you were on the sideline watching. And for me, there was a huge market, a huge group of people who were being totally left out. And there was a gentleman out there from Taiwan, because there is pro-am dancing in Hong Kong, Japan, and Taiwan. And he was so happy I came out, because I was talking about something that he had seen happening in Taiwan. And now I was making it possible and feasible that the people here would think differently and start getting on the bandwagon and promoting this. I mean, there was opposition from the old guard out there if they don't want to change the ways of how dancing's been. But, you know, we don't drive the same motor car. We don't do anything the same as we did 20 years ago. So we need to stay on top of it and get ahead with the times and encourage the dance scene. I would love to see my country, New Zealand, become much more viable country on the world scene, and people go out and see it and participate in events. It's isolated enough as it is because it's quite a long distance, but it doesn't have to be isolated by the fact they don't offer things that are available in the rest of the world.
Right. And it's very true. And I think as when I was an amateur dancer starting out, you know, how lucky was I as a young boy to be able to go out and have my very first competition with my instructor, her name is Karen Cromer.
And you know what? If you didn't have that, Eric, you might still be, well, you wouldn't because you're cute, but you still had to find somebody else who wanted to dance with you, whereas this way,
right. Maybe
there is an amateur dancer out sees you dancing and goes and watch, you become a partnership on a different kind of level, but you're never going to have more fun than when you dance with your teacher.
Exactly. And it's true. And how lucky are you to dance with a professional? But also the fact was that, you know, I had just started my dancing, and 2 months later, I wanted to compete. So I found that competition was for me. It's what kept me going and thriving in this form of dance.
Well, you know, it's when you're dancing with someone who's better than yourself, which typically is a teacher, obviously you're going to learn more and you're going to have fun, because whenever we do something with somebody who's an expert, it's always more fun. And the competitions, I think in everybody, there's that little piece of ham that they want to get out and perform, but they're too scared to do it, you know? And the dance competitions give people the opportunity to do that and in an acceptable environment. You don't feel like you're being stupid and no one's laughing at you. You're actually accomplishing something. And, you know, there are a lot of people in ladies in the dance industry who used to come and take lessons who never wear a dress. And they would be like, oh, my gosh, I'll have to go buy a dress. I don't have a dress. And we are so blasé about it because we always are getting dressed up. You have suits. I have beautiful dresses. We have places to go where we can wear these things.
Right.
And the average person doesn't always have that, and we forget that. You know, they don't have a place. They might have the occasional wedding or engagement party or something in their life to wear a dress and go out. We have events like that in the dancing all the time. And how lucky are we to have that?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Well, it has become our world, so it's what we know to do.
Right. And we don't even think about that because how many suits do you have? I don't even want to think about it. How many dresses and stuff do I have? You know,
it's true.
You know, a girl gets dressed up for a prom, and it's a huge thing because she can buy a dress and get herself all tied up and look great. But how nice if she could do that more than just the prom.
Right.
Wendy,
I want to talk a little bit about you as a judge at competitions. What your job entails as a judge when you're looking at, and maybe we could start with, you know, pro-am dancing, amateur dancing, and then maybe the pro side. Just kind of tap briefly on all three, what you're looking at, what your expectations are, because I believe a lot of people are curious about that.
Well, when you go out and judge, contrary to what a lot of people looking on the side might think, we all go out there with a pretty open mind. And so from the moment you set foot on a dance floor at whatever event you're dancing in, we look at you from the moment you set foot on the floor. And if you're beautifully groomed, we assume that you are going to be a good dancer. Now, that may be a silly assumption, but if I walk out in a beautiful dress and look good, you're going to assume I'm judge, even though whether I am or not. So grooming and appearance is a huge thing about when you first walk out, because an appearance in any walk of life, that's the first thing we see on somebody. So appearance is huge. So now we've looked at, and we look across the floor and we look at who maybe we think looks pretty good out there. And now we have a very short time to judge. Sometimes we might have 20 people on the floor and we have to bring back the best 12. So it's constantly impressions that catch our eye that cause us to find that top 12. And then maybe from that 12, we now have to find 6 for a final. So it's the same thing. We're looking for impressions all the time, what strikes us as what we like. And then when we bring 6 people back to a final, we have to mark them 1st through 6. Now, sometimes there can be 6 people on the floor, and any one of those 6 could win. They're all great. They all got good technique. They've all got good movement. They all look good. So then it starts, good musicality. Then it starts to get into more of what do I prefer over something else. And then sometimes people will get marks from first to sixth, and they go, well, this judge marked me sixth and this judge marked me first. What's wrong with either side of that equation? But if you get very scattered marks between first and sixth, it means the competition was really, really close. Any one of the six could have won. Sometimes I'll find the winner easily. She's my winner or they're my winner. And then I might be agonizing over fourth and fifth. The competition might be really against them. Maybe I find last is easy. That seems it just differs in competition how the thing falls down. And I always say to anyone who has any comment about judging, get a piece of paper and sit on the side of the floor. And whatever the competition is, if you have to bring back 12, find 12 and actually mark the numbers down. Then bring six back to a final and mark those numbers down. And then finally mark those people, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And when you look at an event like that, you'll look at it much more different than if you're sitting on the sideline watching, because when you sit on the sideline watching, you scan the floor and you see somebody you like, and so you just watch who you like. But our job doesn't stop. We can't do that. We have to keep looking at everybody. And sometimes in a competition, I'll see someone and they'll be my winner from the first round. I'm like, I really, really like that couple. They'll get to the final, or in some cases, they don't make the final because my fellow judges haven't put them back, in which time I have to reassess things. But they'll make the final, and maybe they didn't dance so well in the final, and I find they weren't my winner in the final. They're maybe down third or fourth because somebody else actually danced better. So each round when we judge a competition, we go out with an open mind and judge what's in front of us. And we might have things in our head about what we've seen as we've gone along the way, but we always have to have an open mind every time we hit that floor and try and judge again. And it doesn't matter if it's pro-am or the highest level of professional dancing, we judge the same way. Well, I judge the same way. I can't guarantee what everybody judges, but that's how I judge.
So it basically comes off of style, your style versus the other's style.
Yeah, well, you know, I watched a lecture once, one of my contemporaries, and he said, everybody's got great technique. You got to have technique. I always say, we see great feet and we see terrible feet. So if you keep your technique in the average range, it's probably not going to be the thing that hits us. Movement, you notice movement, particularly in the waltz and the tango and the moving dances. Somebody has very good posture, you notice that immediately. So you're drawn to those people because these things stand out in their dancing. But the hardest time is when you get to a final and everyone has good technique and everyone has good posture and everyone has great outfits. And everyone's pretty good with every level. Then that gets to choosing something that moves you more. And that's like great actors. You've got Al Pacino, Robert De Niro, you know, George Clooney, all these different actors that hit lined up. Which one do you like? Well, you know, maybe it's a different performance that you like different people. Judging is sort of like that.
Yeah, that's a good comparison. So can you explain to our viewers and listeners what technique actually means and is?
Well, technique is where you put your feet. And the technique books have been laid out for many years, and some of it has changed a little bit, just like we don't drive the same car. The technique, we found different ways to do things. But the technique is traditionally in dancing to make the dancing feel better and look right. It's like you walk down the road, you walk a certain way. Everybody has a technique walking. Sit in an airport sometime and study everybody's walks. I constantly do that because I'm traveling. And everyone has a different way of walking, you know.
Right.
So, you know, some people actually go somewhere and some trudge along and some have bad posture. Actually, watching people walking, it's not that you're judging me walking, but you see the different ways they walk. It's kind of like judging a dance competition, because then you see the different ways people dance. But there is an accepted technique syllabus set out in every dance that we all know. And, you know, the technique, if you're doing heels and toe leads in the wrong places, well, that's a silly mistake, because that gives us a reason to mark you down, because technically you're doing something wrong. So the technique is the basis of dancing. But it's not the only thing in dancing. It's the basis. That's what we stand on our feet, and that's technique. Then after that, other things come into play.
Mm-hmm.
But,
so
I mean,
you'll look at
a couple. You can have the greatest technique in the world and the worst posture in the world, and it doesn't matter that you had the greatest technique. Your posture is going to cancel it out because you just look wrong doing whatever you're doing.
Right. So, Wendy, when you're looking at a couple on the dance floor, what is it the first thing you look at, posture, movement, technique, or does it vary?
Well, okay, let me ask you something. Somebody walks, you go into a party and you look in the room. What do you look at?
Well, normally I'll look at them from head to toe. You kind of do the big eye scan.
Right, so that's kind of what we do in the dancing. And so who do you gravitate to?
The person who I think, you know, will catch my eye, you know, it could be the way they're dressed or how well they stand.
Which is appearance and posture. So
it
we're the same thing. You know, you could put us out there as judges and maybe a layperson, just somebody who's one of your audience members standing next to us, and I could turn around to them and say to them, which one do you like the look of when they walk on the floor? And there's probably a good chance it's the same one I did.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, so what you watch as an individual, you may come up with the same result because we all watch what we like.
Right.
You know, we watch what we like, and that's really what dancing's about. And, of course, it's an opinion, so everyone can hide behind an opinion anyway. So you can say, that was my opinion, you know, which
right.
is part of the flaw for going into the Olympic system because it is an opinion. And we have competitions where coaches actually, people who coach people in the competition are actually judging them as well. And that can be in your favor. People can say, well, you know, they favor them because they teach them, but it can work against you too because when you teach somebody, you expect a certain standard of them. And if they're not producing that standard, then sometimes you're harder on them than if you weren't teaching them. So that kind of is... Most of us as judges try to separate ourselves and just give a fair decision because that's our job, to give a fair decision.
Yeah, well, I remember competing in college on the collegiate level. My coach was one of the judges for the Yale competition in Connecticut. And
yeah.
I had three coaches of mine that were on the judging panel. So I always remember being incredibly nervous because they knew where my weaknesses were.
Right.
And one of them, who she was
right,
and one of them, her name's Karen Frommer, and she's a studio owner in Connecticut, and she'd be at all of my competitions. I remember I'd been dancing with her since I was 8 years old. You know, she knows my strengths and weaknesses, and she at times would mark me second or third. I would luckily win in the final, come in first, but I would see her mark, and she would say to me, well, you know, I would put that there because I know what you need to work on, but other judges felt, you know, you were okay. So, but she'd always be very fair,
true.
And I think that coaches are, when they're out there judging their own students, they're fair when it comes to that.
We try to be fair, and, you know, with regard to my son, I sometimes teach my son, and he's like, well, he goes, are you as hard on everybody else as you're harder on me than you are on everybody else? I go, no, I'm exactly the same with you as I am with anybody else, because every lesson that I teach, I want that person to be the best they can possibly be, and I want to give them as much information as I can. And I'm not a person who's going to stand there and tell you you're fabulous if you're not. I want to encourage, and I'm on your side because you ask me for advice. But he's
right.
always saying that, you know, would probably be his worst judge, and I'm like, because you know what, you need to do this.
Right.
But it's,
Wendy, let's
it's
talk
true,
quickly.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I wanted to talk quickly about choreography because you're a big choreographer. You came here to California to choreograph for our show January 15th. And that's something that you're very talented with. And you've used it on so many levels. You choreographed the 100th and 200th show on Dancing with the Stars. Is that correct?
Yes, I did.
You first start with what it takes to be a choreographer, and then let's talk about the 200th show that we all saw on Dancing with the Stars that you choreographed.
Well, to be a choreographer, you know, there's not so many choreographers in our industry as there are coaches. There's no question, you have to have a knack for choreography. And when I was a little ballet girl, there used to be a competition that we heard the music once and then we would go on the stage and dance it. And that's how it was. We were kept in a room and then we would stand on the side of the stage, hear the music once, and then we would go out and dance. And that competition I always won when I was doing ballet. And I remember my mother passed away a long time ago, but she always said, when I was little, a person who can do that is truly a dancer. And I thought, oh, it's just my mom saying that, you know. Anyway, later on in life, I realized one day choreographing in a studio that that's what I do. You put the music on, and I just dance around to the music. So it's definitely a gift that it's not about being smart or anything. For some reason, I can do this. I don't know why I can do it. It's not hard for me to choreograph. You can give me any kind of music, and you've seen me do that. I will dance around. And I love I love my job with when I choreograph for the students, because I get to dance with different teachers, and everybody that I dance with, you come up with something different because you're dancing with a different person. So it creates a different situation. And with regard to students, I usually look at the student and see where they're at, what they're capable of, what their strengths are, what I think they would be good at, because I want to make them look good. And I choreograph to that. At a professional level, I just do the same thing. I look at what they want. It's got to be great music. I hate it if it's not great music. It's very difficult for me to choreograph to music I don't like. And then with regard to things like Dancing with the Stars, which is a whole different thing, because I'm always on a time limit there. They might bring me in Friday. We have a rehearsal Friday, rehearsal Saturday, camera blocking Sunday, Monday, do the show live. Well, this is not like a Broadway show where I have weeks and eight-hour days of rehearsal. I'm doing it like on the fly. But I found that with the professional things, that what I would do is I would listen to the music. I would decide who I wanted to dance with who. Maybe I wanted two girls. In the last show, I used Cheryl and Anna Tribinskaya with Max. And then I knew that if I put Mark and Derek with Lacey, they were similar in their feeling. Then I put two ballroom couples together and said, well, you're going to do the ballroom section. And then Louis and Tony Davolani and Chelsea and Karina, I'm like, well, okay, I want something spectacular. I want you to jump off the stage, and then you can do something. I need something on the floor here. So, and then I have a meeting with the director, and he'll tell me, well, I want them to come off from here. So then I'll sort out, okay, this is how we're going to come on. And that doesn't always work exactly right, because he can't get the camera shots he wants. So he'll say, well, I can see this one. I don't need to see them, and I got to come out sooner or come out later or whatever. So we adjust it as we go along. And then all of the little pieces fit together like a jigsaw puzzle. And that's how I do Dancing with the Stars, because in Dancing with the Stars, you have to you're dealing with obviously great professionals, but on very limited time, and camera angles and different things that the director might want, as opposed to, say, I was doing a number in a ballroom. That's a whole different thing again, because we have no wings like on a stage. So you have to choreograph entrances with the thing that they're coming in from the audience or somewhere. If you choreograph on a stage, we have the asset of wings where you can come in and go off, but we only have one front on a stage. And our ballroom dancing, typically we have four sides, because most of our ballrooms are four-sided ballrooms, right, with audience all around. So each job that I have, with regard to choreography, I have to take into account what the parameters are of what I'm choreographing. How long do I have to do it? What is the talent available that I'm doing it with? So they're all factors, but it's my favorite thing to do, as long as the music's good. If the music's not good, I'm like a lump of oatmeal.
And how lucky are you to be able to go to Los Angeles and, you know, work with Dancing with the Stars, the professionals on the show? Are they easy to work with?
Well, let's put it this way. They're incredible dancers. All of them are credible dancers. It depends what their stress level is. If they're the ones who are left, right, you know, they're still on the show, they're doing two numbers with their star, they're very stressed, so I try to keep whatever they're doing to a minimum. The ones who have maybe been off the show and who are now not doing the pro-am stuff with their stars, they have more time, and they're more, so I make it a little bit more ambitious for them. But they're like, they always love to muck around, and I'm always saying to them, okay, guys, can you go full out so I can see what this thing looks like? And they're always like, well, you know we're going to do it. I'm like, well, I know you're going to do it, but is there any chance we can do it, like, now? So eventually they do it. And they're
you're,
right,
you're,
they
you're
are.
Tough on the dance floor. You have to whip them into shape.
They're incredible dancers, but, you know, you have to understand, too, they're not formation dancers. They're not used to having to do what the person next to them is doing. They've made their careers out of being individuals, and they're not really that happy about, well, she's got her arm in the air, you got to put your arm in the air. They're like, well, I don't feel it like that. And you understand that because that's not, they all are all individual dancers. So I try to set the things as they come along, and I give them as much license to do their own thing, because their own thing is always going to be better than something I'll just come up with. So particularly for Dancing with the Stars, it's more like I map out what I want. I give them how many counts of music they've got. I might say to them, I want you to jump off the stage and catch her, or I want you to look really sexy with the two girls on stage, do something like that. I want cha-cha when you come out here. And then if they do something I don't like, I'll tweak it and say, no, that step's not effective. Let's try this. The boring people, okay, I want a lift, but I want that lift to go straight to a drop. So one of them will do what I like, and I'll be, that's the one I want. So I really do the choreography in very broad strokes. I think the first show I ever did, I choreographed everything. And I went, oh, my gosh, this does not work. I found out this does not work. It's like they don't feel it. They want to do this. And what about that? And so I found out it was much better to allocate certain amounts of music to them and let them do what they wanted to do. And then I had the option of going, well, I like that, that, and that. And it was a quicker way to do it. It was more effective. Everyone was happier. So whatever the job is, you know, I've done other jobs where I've had to work with choreographers who I didn't like their stuff, and my stuff was going back to back with it. And it was really hard. It was really hard to do that. I was like, well, that's not my vision, and you're messing with my stuff. And it's hard, but I do actually quite, I would love to do a collaboration. My goal is to do a collaboration with a ballet company. I would love to incorporate ballroom dancing and ballet together as some kind of collaboration. So I have some goals with regard to choreography myself, you know, in the future, to do some things that I think would be interesting. And I'm very, I enjoy the challenge of what I'm doing and seeing it come to fruition. That's a big buzz for me.
Yeah.
I talk a lot, Eric. Did I deviate off the subject?
that's quite all right. So Dancing with the Stars is lucky to have you. I'm sure they'll use you in the future. My listeners and viewers can go to YouTube and type in the 200th show, and they can actually see the choreography that you did for the pro number, which was fantastic. Wendy, we have a few seconds left of the show. I want you to plug your competition in Las Vegas again. Where can people go to get tickets, website, where is it?
Well, first of all, the competition is called Holiday Dance Classic. So you can look up the website Holiday Dance Classic on the internet, and it's got the price list, it's got what's on and when, it's got who's judging it. It even has some of the people who, if you go on the heat list, you would see who was going to be here. Your spectators are very welcome. You can buy tickets at the door. We have a ticket desk right outside the ballroom door. The only thing is, at this point, you would have to bring a cashier's check or cash. We don't have a facility for credit cards. And we don't take personal checks. We have various things on various days. We're open from each day. On Wednesday, it starts at 8 o'clock in the morning, and the first session finishes at 5:45, then it goes from 6 to 11 at night. On Thursday, we're from 9 till the afternoon, and then the night session starts at 5 and finishes to 11. On Friday, we start at 7:30, and we finish at 7:30, and then our evening session starts at 8:30. On Friday night, there are all professional rising star events. On Saturday, we start at start pretty early at Saturday, 9 o'clock, and we have children on Saturday afternoon. Anyone who's interested in seeing the children dance, they're on Saturday afternoon. Then on Sunday, we start at 8:30. We go through probably around 6 o'clock at night for the day session. At the night, we start at 8:30, and we have professional events on both Saturday and Sunday night. And on Sunday night, we have a special professional show featuring Jonathan Roberts and Anna Travinskaya from Dancing with the Stars, Nick Kosovich from Dancing with the Stars, and we have a special singer, Lakeisha Jones. She was some season...
Okay.
Yes, yes. I think you're going to interview her or something, aren't you?
She's going to be singing.
Yeah, she's going to be singing in the show, and so we have some live music and people dancing with Lakeisha, plus she's going to sing on her own. So,
Many things. Wendy Johnson, everyone, thank you all for listening. Wendy, thank you so much for coming on the show. I'm Eric Tercio.
Thank you for inviting me.
Of course. So this was great. All right, Wendy. And we will talk very soon in Vegas.
Okay, let's dance.
We will, definitely.
Okay, bye.
Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.